Hello and welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk about movies. That's about as simple as it gets. We're going to be reviewing Edgar Wright's new film, Baby Driver, this week. I'm Cameron Salina. Joining me are my co-hosts, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Alrighty, so like I said, we reviewed Baby Driver this week. I think we're all pretty excited about it. But Trevor, welcome back to the podcast. How's San Diego?
San Diego is beautiful and perfect. I'm not mad that I didn't see Transformers. I am mad that you guys talked about a lot of other cool things except for Transformers. So, you know, mixed bag. That's what you get, though.
Of those cool things that we mentioned, are there any that you want to talk about really quick? You need to just give your thoughts on as quickly as possible.
I'm not worried about Star Wars because Kathleen Kennedy knows what's up. That's my short feelings on the situation. and we heard similar things out of Rogue One, and Rogue One turned out to be awesome, in my opinion. So I think it can be fixed.
Okay.
In short, also, Logan Lucky looks awesome, and I knew that Soderbergh wasn't actually done, and I'm so ready for him to be back.
Trevor, we called this back in college, didn't we? Because I remember us talking about when he had announced his end, and he did, like, he was like, I have three films left over the course of the next year. I'm going to do Haywire, I'm going to do Magic Mike, and then I'm going to do Side Effects, and then I'm out. And I think you even said back when we were in college, you're like, there's no way he's done. Like, he's going to come back. And he is. He's back.
No,
and luckily,
his
movie looks
like,
fantastic.
He feels like someone who has too many stories to tell.
Well, especially, like, if you look at his filmography and you go through what he's done, I mean, that guy, there was a point where he was churning out three movies a year, and all three of them were great. Like, Haywire's fantastic. We can talk about mine and Trevor's shameful experience where we saw Magic Mike together in a theater. And that's, I think I can just say me and Trevor saw that in a theater just because of Soderbergh and...
Yes, exactly.
Hey, no shame.
That's about as, like...
No shame.
As awkward as I'm making it seem right now is as awkward as it was for us. I think we both just kind of walked in and were like, we shouldn't do this. We shouldn't do this. We've already bought tickets. Oh, gosh. Like,
it was the
we
two
were
of
so
us.
In.
It was the two of us and a whole bunch of middle-aged women that stared at us the entire time we were walking to our seats.
We even thought this out to the detail of like, okay, if we go at like a 1 p.m. showing in the middle of summer, nobody's going to be there. And it was packed. I mean, I want to say the theater was like 60% full, and it was like me and Trevor. We had to have been the only two guys there.
Yeah, I would say so.
And for all the crap that that movie gets, like it's so not about, like, it uses stripping as a vehicle to tell you this whole other story. And as weird as it is, I think that's what got so many people into the theater. But the movie's so much more than that. Like, it's the trip it takes you on is pretty interesting.
Strippers are people too.
Strippers matter. Males. Oh gosh. Okay. No. Drink more coffee. It's so, for those of you who don't know, we are recording this early Saturday morning because we all have 4th of July plans and we would like to be able to enjoy that time and not, you know, worry about having to record this podcast on a Monday like we normally do. So we're recording this Saturday morning. Feels good to get it out early. I don't know about you guys, but
yeah, I like it.
I am not a morning person, so this is we'll see if my brain's able to operate this early in the morning. But alrighty, so let's talk trailers a little bit that played in front of our movie. And then we'll kind of get into a little bit of Edgar Wright's filmography, and then we're just going to go right into Baby Driver. So, Trevor, you had a couple trailers you wanted to talk about that played before Baby Driver.
Okay, the first one is Flatliners, the new Ellen Page movie, and it also has the wonderful Diego Luna in it.
With a amazing ponytail, long hair, by the way.
Right, exactly, yes. So this movie looks like maybe the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I don't know how this like made it out of a pitch meeting. It also has the issue of the trailer basically being a summarized version of the movie that we've talked about before. So basically what happens is these medical students want to know what happens when you almost die. So they have each other, like basically they like kill each other on the table, and then they bring them back to life using modern technology and all that kind of fun stuff. So these people start doing it, and then they start having these like special powers, and then they it turns out that potentially there's some kind of otherworldly force that compelled them to do this so that they could so that it could come into our world and start taking over. So this was like an sort of the first half of this trailer was like an interesting sci-fi kind of like, what are the dangers of medical experimentation and taking things too far? And then it turned into just like a 2-bit horror movie that had some familiar faces in it. And I think, I don't know, this movie would have worked better if it was a surprise horror movie, I think. But the marketing is completely undercutting any interest that I had in this whatsoever. If the trailer was half as long, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of unique. That's kind of I could kind of see that, but no, after seeing the whole trailer, this is garbage. This is really stupid. It doesn't seem like it's going to be compelling in the slightest. It's just a somewhat unique 15-minute intro to a horror movie, I think. The only thing we don't know is how everyone dies.
This almost feels more like an episode of like Black Mirror, or like it'd be something that would work better as a Twilight Zone episode, but not a full movie.
Yes,
did you
you're
guys
exactly
see Kiefer
right.
Sutherland in the trailer? Because I'm reading the Wikipedia page, and he's the sixth billed person in the movie.
Yeah, how does he his role must not be very big if he's not in the trailer, right?
But if you get Kiefer, I mean, you're gonna use that man. He's Jack Bauer.
I know
he gets middle-aged white people in the seats like nobody else.
That's true. He does.
Maybe Liam Neeson.
That's also true. That's fair.
Yes. Dude, Neeson gets people in seats. It is interesting. The director
he does have a very particular set of skills.
There we go.
Hey-o.
Work that in there. Niels Arden Oplev from Denmark is the director, and he did the Swedish version of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo with Noomi Rapace and the recently deceased Michael Nyquist. But the only other thing that's of any worth in his filmography is that he directed the very first episode of Mr. Robot. So I almost feel like wow. He directed that. Somebody saw it and then was like, dude, this guy is amazing. Yeah. Well, how much, what do you need? And then they just threw him money. Because he has nothing else. He's done a couple of other things here or there, but he's done nothing else big. So for him to get, you know, enough for a movie is interesting. Jake, did you see Flatliners?
Yeah, I watched the trailer. Trevor texted us when he was in the theater and the trailer played, and he was like, oh my gosh, guys. And then I had the trailer in my theater as well. And it was one of those, like, within halfway through the trailer, I was like, well, I'm going to use the bathroom. this looks like garbage. Who knows? I mean, we might be surprised, but the concept is pretty weak.
Mm-hmm. It's a sequel.
What?
It's a sequel to a 1990 Joel Schumacher film with Michael Douglas.
Whoa.
Michael Douglas. Oh, Kiefer Sutherland is in the 1990 version. Kiefer Sutherland, Julian Roberts, Kevin Bacon, William Baldwin, Oliver Platt.
What?
Michael Douglas produced it. Yeah, this is... Oh my goodness. The poster is the most 90s thing. It's like Kiefer Sutherland in the middle, and then all of them are like blue lit from behind, and it's just all these like heads.
Of course.
Look up the poster. It's... And was nominated for an Academy Award in 1990.
Wait, so...
It's an Academy Award nominated film.
Sequel or remake?
It says... I mean, so this is Wikipedia. It says sequel. Which would make sense with the fact that Kiefer Sutherland's in it.
Well, I mean,
and playing the exact same character.
I didn't know that. And if the first one's good, I guess I'm intrigued. But I think I'd just rather watch the first one.
I mean, it was nominated for best effects.
So oh, okay.
It was Academy Award. It was the Academy Award. It was nominated for was sound editing. Okay.
Well.
I mean,
so
you can
never
have
mind.
Good sound editing in a bad film.
That's true.
But that's such a like random like, hey, what? We only have four films that are good at sound editing this year. We just need a fifth. Oh, Flatliners doesn't have any. Okay, let's put Flatliners in there for
what
sound.
What movie
editing
this year was loud but not overwhelming? Good sound editing.
My goodness. Okay, so this is interesting. I'm like oddly intrigued by this movie now. Although this does go with the theory that Hollywood is completely out of ideas if they're sequeling things like this that we've never heard of and that didn't do particularly well at the box office.
Yeah, so. I think if you like, based on the trailers that I've seen recently, everything is either a remake, obviously, or based on a book. And I think Hollywood is just scared to innovate because of the like capital risk compared to the potential payoff. And so they're just going with proven ideas. Like if you want to find an original idea now, just read a book.
But the interesting thing to me is that two of the more critically successful movies this year are movies that have nothing to do with, like, they don't have sequels, they don't have previous stories, but like Get Out, which ended up with like a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, and this movie are both completely original ideas.
Oh yeah, like that's what people want to see and that's what's critically acclaimed, but that's not what studios want to invest in.
Yep.
I just looked at what we've done so far this year. Do you guys realize that we have only done one original film so far? That's not based on... I mean, like, so look at it. Guardians, King Arthur, Pirates of the Caribbean, Wonder Woman, Transformers, and It Comes at Night is the one original film.
Well, that's great.
So should we just quit? Are we done?
Jake seems legitimately like depressed about this.
I am. That's just really sad because like It Comes at Night wasn't great, but I'm higher on it now. I'm higher on it now than when I originally saw it. But like that and Baby Driver,
say,
it's just so much more fun.
All of the Pixar's
are
original.
It's the one film
though
that we've talked about way past when we texted about that movie for like 2 weeks after we reviewed it.
Yeah.
I think that's an indicator of something they did right. I mean, Jake, you sent out like a 2-paragraph explanation of what happened in the movie. And that was like the fact that we're all thinking and processing, that's what a movie should do. So they at least did something right in that regard. That's pretty cool. I also think that Jake's analysis of it was pretty spot on, and I've reread it a couple times and it makes more sense and more sense. So,
yeah, I literally like woke up and I was like, that's what happened. Like I had an epiphany in my sleep and then texted you guys.
Were there boils on your arm when you woke up?
I would definitely say that it's better now than it was. Then I would say that it's better once it sits with you.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I read like kind of an excerpt of an interview with Trey Edward Schultz, the director, and he said, someone asked him about the structure of everything, and he said, we can only know what the characters know. And I think that he did a really good job of doing that with this film. And that's what makes
it interesting. Gosh, that's a fascinating way to view it.
Yeah.
I mean, because you really get that sense of, like, they don't know what's going on in the world, we don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's why I think I might have been right the first thing I said, that this is going to be, like, an influential film, even though it wasn't a super popular film.
Yeah, I feel like we need to regrade that one at some point.
Yeah, come back in a couple years.
When we do like a year-end review.
That's a good point, yeah.
Of like our favorites and movies we saw this year, I think that's going to be a good point to revisit this. Because it'll be out on DVD, then we could have seen it again. Or I think that'll be an interesting time to look back on it. And especially when you look at like what we've seen this year, we've seen so many garbage films. Which makes me excited about today and makes me excited about the next couple weeks, because there are some great movies coming out in the next couple weeks. But I think there's a lot to be excited about going forward. I mean, July, we have Spider-Man Homecoming, War for the Planet of the Apes, Valerian, which has been getting good reviews. And then August, we have Detroit, the new Catherine Bigelow film. And midway through August, we get Logan Lucky. So, I mean, there's a handful of potentially really good films coming out that are not completely original, but I don't know if they, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but they feel more original or more developed, I guess is the word.
It looks like a good
things we've been seeing.
Like back end of the summer in terms of original creative talent or like taking risks with big properties. Like War for the Planet of the Apes. I mean, it's the third in a trilogy, which is also like a prequel to a franchise, but I mean what they're doing with it is awesome. So it looks like it's gonna be a good end of the summer, which I'm excited about.
And there's a few other things. I don't know if we're going to be able to see a review or to review this podcast, but I think The Big Sick looks really good. I think that Ghost Story looks really interesting. I think that Band-Aid looks pretty interesting. Some of those things, unfortunately, I may not be able to see yet because they don't come to Waco, but okay. I think all those kind of look
Netflix.
Like some good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trevor, I didn't even think about, I'm so excited about seeing Big Sick. There was an interview on the Nerdist with Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon, who are the real life couple that The Big Sick is based on. And I mean, it was fascinating listening to them talk about their story and how they developed this movie. And it got me more excited about that. I think that's one that could have some legs. I mean, there's always that one like indie film that comes out during the summer that picks up a little bit, and I really hope it's that one, because I think that one could appeal. I think that one has mass appeal in how it could permeate through movie going audiences, and if word of mouth gets going on that one, I think it's going to pick up pretty big.
Yeah.
Alrighty, Trevor, what's the other trailer that you want to talk about?
In the true fashion of how we like to talk about money grab movies, I saw the trailer for Pitch Perfect 3, in which the Bart and Bellas, as I believe they are called, enter some kind of Battle of the Bands or contest against bands that use instruments, and they're an a cappella band.
For the USO, so we've got the military in there too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, support the troops. Go see this movie. Sorry, I shouldn't say anything else then.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
It looks awful. It looks terrible. Also, these people are, I mean, they were too old to play college students 4 years ago, and they're definitely too old to play college students now. Anna Kendrick is, like, I mean, the cutest thing on earth, but definitely older than 22. Same thing with Anna Camp.
Excuse me, Trevor. First off. I hate that so much. Akka, what? Stop it. Stop it.
I will say, so in the first film, when they're hanging out in that like drain swimming pool doing no diggity, I liked that.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I will say, there were some genuine, like that first film was amazing. And if they had just left it at that, I feel like the reputation of the series as a whole would be a lot bigger. I remember going into that movie, I think I was dragged to it by a couple of friends, and within the first 3 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and spoil this because it's been out for years. And if you haven't seen it, and you're listening to this, that's kind of shocking. but that first scene where they're singing and you're like, oh my gosh, this is such a stereotypical like singing film, or this is exactly what I thought of it based on the trailers. And then the lead singer throws up on stage. I don't know if I've ever had as much of a shocking laugh reaction as I did to that moment.
Yeah, the first film is really fun. And it came out when we were in college, and like we went to Baylor, and Baylor has this big musical thing called Sing. And so it like parodied that really. And so I think for us, it really hit home when we were in that environment. But I mean, even now it holds up. It's funny. The second one's fine. Each one of these films is basically like, there's like five good laughs, and then the rest is just kind of like, okay, more a cappella puns. This is great.
But even the second one is like, if you break it down on a scene by scene level, it's almost exactly the same as the first one.
Oh, for sure.
Like there's the opening like musical number, and then something goes wrong, and then they have to come back, and then they go do some sort of like riff off underground musical scene, which is the best part of both movies. and then somebody leaves and they get into a fight, and then they have to come back together, and then there's one big emotional end of the movie. And I don't, as good as the first one is, the second one just copies it. And the second one's fun, but the second one isn't nearly as remarkable as the first. I really wish that we could just watch that first one again without knowledge of the second, because man, that first one was pretty amazing at what it was able to do. And I wish that we had just that first one to judge this series off of.
These are the acapella version of The Hangover.
Oh, there we go. Exactly. The director of this one is a brand new director. It's not Elizabeth Banks. It's Trish C. Is a Grammy Award winning director. She did her really only big film is Step Up All In, but she has done a lot of work with OK Go. She did Here It Goes Again. She did Upside Down and Inside Out. I mean, she's done all of OK Go's big inventive music videos. So that's intriguing. I didn't know that. That makes me a little bit more interested in the movie, but
I think
it'll be interesting
just
to
rather
see.
Watch those in the theater.
To our listeners, if you haven't seen OK Go's music videos, just go to YouTube, type in OK Go. Their music
Meeting
videos
getting
are
is my favorite.
The best.
They're so
what
good.
Was that?
That's the one where they're in the car. That's amazing.
Yeah, they're all incredible. Their music videos are better than their music. So
definitely.
That's sadly true.
Gotta stay relevant sadly, somehow.
Sadly that's right.
Gotta stay relevant. So that's Pitch Perfect 3, which comes out December 22nd. I don't think they'll have much competition, you know, around that time. Just, you know, Star Wars, Last Jedi, and any other Oscar film that they're trying to cram in at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Jumanji. Hey, do you guys want to talk Jumanji?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just going to give guys. That a one word trailer review. Woof. Just woof. Woof.
I will say, so I watched it when we texted each other about it. And was shocked and just appalled. And the second time around watching the trailer, I had a couple genuine laughs. I still don't think the movie looks great, but there were a couple parts that actually kind of got to me and I thought were funny. Of note, though, that's not really apparent in the trailer, is Nick Jonas is in this movie. So
yeah, saw that.
You know it's going to make big money between him and The Rock.
Well, like, I love this cast. Like, the whole cast is phenomenal. And I will say, like, I had a negative viewpoint when I saw Goosebumps with Jack Black last year. It was, we watched it on Netflix, I think. And it's actually, like, a really fun, like, kids movie that adults can still have a good time in. And so
It's way better than it should be.
Yeah, exactly. So if this is like that, then great, and we've been proven wrong. But not a good trailer. And like seriously, Welcome to the Jungle and Guns N' Roses. Like we couldn't be more creative. Come on.
You know that with it being titled Welcome to the Jungle, that they like if they didn't use that song, would be like, oh, really? Not going to use Welcome to the Jungle in your trailer? I mean, that was just the most telegraphed song ever.
I bet they
ever.
Got like the rights to the song, and then they were like, yes, now we can title the movie Welcome to the Jungle.
It's the new way of titling movies. Did we get the rights to this? Yes. Okay, let's go ahead and name it this.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
goodness.
Would be,
okay.
This would be more interesting if it was actually those random high schoolers that are unfamiliar than them turning into all these famous people.
That's kind of what I thought it was
going
to be.
I like the cast, but I mean, I think the story might be more interesting with regular people. Also, I'm like kind of over Kevin Hart.
See, I Kevin Hart's one of those people that he's worked so hard to get where he is that I want him to have I can't think of a movie he's been in outside of his stand-up stuff that's had massive success. He was in Central Intelligence with The Rock, and that wasn't great, but it did decent at the box office. And
well, his new stand-up is horrible. He's being stretched too thin.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really bad.
That's the hard thing about stand-up comedy is I feel like every stand-up comedian And stand-up comedy is a whole different world. Like, that's so... I have so much respect for anybody that does stand-up comedy. You're putting yourself out there in such an insane way. But I feel like stand-up comedians always do, like, two really good stand-ups, and then they get known, and then the third's like, meh, that was okay. And then their fourth just kind of goes downhill.
Amy Schumer.
Well, that would be... That's a whole different subject. But, like, I mean, the thing that... So Kevin Hart's that way, I feel like. But then Aziz Ansari was that way too. Like, his third one that he did at Madison Square Garden was not great, but his first two are hysterical. And I feel like there's only so much, it's so hard to create material for stand up.
Except that Aziz is also a filmmaking genius.
Yeah. Like, yes. He's got that to fall back onto.
Oh, yeah. Nothing against Aziz. I mean, that guy. He's doing great things, so hats off to him.
Yeah.
But I think we can all agree that his more recent stand-ups haven't been as good as his original.
For sure.
His first two stand-ups are insane.
Yeah, because he was writing Master of None and finishing Parks and Rec at the same time. Like you said, they get famous and they get attention, and then they get spread too thin while at the same time getting access to their biggest stage. Like, the Kevin Hart one is at, like, an NFL stadium, which they sold out. And it's not funny. But, I mean, the dude made bank, so good for him.
I have to say, I'm not a fan of the, like, movie stand-up where there's, like, 20 minutes of, like...
Skip it
every
time.
Getting to the...
The intro stuff. Skip it every single time.
Oh. That's just... are there people out there that are like, man... That Kevin Hart stand-up was okay, but that intro bit, that was gold.
I can't do that.
I don't... Oh, man. Alrighty. Well, moving on, let's talk about Baby Driver. I think we all have varying degrees of experience with Edgar Wright, but let's talk a little bit about our past experiences with Edgar Wright. Trevor, I learned right before we started recording, this is your first Edgar Wright film?
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of other ones, but yeah, my first, unless you count his tiny fingerprints on Ant-Man, which I don't, this is my first Edgar Wright film.
Or that scene in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Well, that's true. But my first Edgar Wright film, not intentionally, it's just kind of the way things have worked out.
I find that, I mean, that's, did I don't, I'm trying to remember when I became like a huge Edgar Wright film. I feel like I had inklings of it because I saw Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz in high school, but when we were roommates, I had to have been a huge fan. So that shocks me that we got through being roommates together without you ever having seen Scott Pilgrim, Shaun of the Dead, or Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. Pretty weird.
Jake, what's your experience have you seen all of Edgar Wright's stuff?
I've seen the whole Cornetto trilogy, and Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz Army. They're in my top 100, maybe even top 50 films of all time. They're just so great. And then I've seen like half of Scott Pilgrim. I don't know why I haven't seen the whole thing. And I know that people say that that's his masterpiece. That just like Trevor, I just haven't gotten around to seeing that one, but no, I mean, I love the whole Cornetto trilogy, even I think it's World's End, which I think is one of those underrated movies. In terms of Edgar Wright, I will see anything that he has his fingerprints on. I think he is one of the best directors in the game right now, and definitely one of the best up-and-comers, if we could call him that. I think he's under the radar. But I'm super excited for the next 10 years from Edgar Wright.
Yeah, I think he has a completely unique voice, and Edgar Wright's a top three favorite director for me. It's like him, Spielberg, and I think there's a couple people I could put in as number three. But I mean, he has yet to miss in my book. Hot Fuzz was like number 8 in my top 10. I think it's. And you could easily put Shaun of the Dead in there too. World's End is great, but it's not as good as those other two, but it's still so great. And gosh, Scott Pilgrim is, if I'm putting a list of the most underrated movies of the past 15 years, it's Scott Pilgrim and Speed Racer. I can't think of a more underrated film that should be loved and should be widely acknowledged, especially in our comic book time that we're living in right now. But Scott Pilgrim is just fantastic. It's so unique. And I think that's the thing that I love about Edgar Wright, is that every time that you go see an Edgar Wright film, you know that you're getting something unique and something that only he could bring you. Like, I can't think of any other director that could have made any of the Coronado trilogy or could have made Scott Pilgrim, or, I mean, even Baby Driver. I think he's a wholly unique director. And so far he's 5 for 5 in my book, and 4 out of his 5 are completely original films. And you could even argue that Scott Pilgrim, which deviates from the source material a little bit, is pretty, as far as on the range of how much it adapts something, it's pretty unique and original.
No one would make that film how he made that film.
No. Oh, gosh, no. I mean, the way that he... Gosh, that film is so comic booky. Like, there's literally times on scene where somebody gets punched and the word pow comes on screen. And yet, it's so sincere and so... And that's something we'll talk about, is Edgar Wright, as much as he parodies things, is the most, like, sincere. Like, you watch Hot Fuzz and you're like, he's making fun of action movies, yet you can tell that he loves these action movies, and you can just... You feel that sincerity and love for movies in every single thing he makes, which is, if there was one thing I could say about Edgar Wright, it'd be that you can tell that this guy just loves movies and loves getting to make movies. And you can genuinely feel his enthusiasm for just films in general as he makes every single movie. And that's something that's missing from so many different things. Alrighty, but let's go ahead and jump into our general thoughts of Baby Driver. If you read the synopsis on IMDb, after being coerced into working for a crime boss, a young getaway driver finds himself taking part in a heist doomed to fail. That's pretty accurate. I was pleasantly surprised by how little the marketing gave away for this movie, which is huge nowadays. And I feel like this was one of the first times I watched very little going into a movie, but I want to get your guys' general thoughts first. So, Jake, what are your general thoughts on Baby Driver?
I love this movie. This movie is style over substance, but that's totally fine because there's so much substance. It's style with a purpose, and it's amazing. Like I said, Edgar Wright's one of the best around. He's been working on this film for 22 years. Like, every single shot was storyboarded. It shows. The use of music in this is perfection. Like, better than Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it is amazing. And music is one of the best ways to imply mood in a film. And when you marry music with, like, the actual writing of the script and storyboarding, it shows. I mean, just the timing, the editing. If this isn't nominated for best editing, I will be shocked, because one of the things that Edgar Wright does that I love is he uses, like, cuts and transitions to supplement the story, whereas most people would just be like, cut to a scene of downtown. Okay, now we're in downtown. He does
such a good
stuff.
Job of editing.
Yeah, it's
like the way that he edits films. And I never thought about this, but it's perfect for an action car heist movie. I mean, yeah.
It's perfect. And I love this movie. I have some thoughts about what could have made it, I think, a little bit better. But this movie is the perfect summer movie. I could talk about how much I love this movie for a long time. So, Trevor, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I loved it as well. It's you know, really, it's just a little, like, slice of life young romance movie with a few crazy car stunts built around it, you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of works. It's like Cam said, I think that the marketing didn't give things away, which is fantastic. I didn't see a bunch of trailer. I think I saw one trailer and I was like, yep, that Edgar Wright. All right, cool. I'm in. Doesn't matter. It's fantastic. I think the first thing I wrote in my notes was how great the editing is. There was so much going on, but you're never confused. Everything is perfect. And I mean, and you can see, I didn't know about how, I knew that he had been working on it for a long time and had the idea for a while. I didn't know that everything had been storyboarded so meticulously, but I mean, it totally shows. Like it pays off because it works. The action flows. Everything is smooth. To me, it's the perfect kind of summer blockbuster for me because it's got excitement. It's got explosions. It's got action, but everything is realistic. Everything is believable. Like every single thing that happens. I mean, the film either grounds it in reality or even the things that are a little bit, maybe not quite realistic. It earns them through the action and the lead up to them. The acting is great. This is the first time I've seen Ansel Elgort in anything, because his other movies are not really my deal. But I thought the
You're
way
not
that
a
he,
big Fault in Our Stars fan.
I am not. I love John Green's American history videos on YouTube, though.
I will say, Trevor, all joking aside, Fault in Our Stars seem like, for those of you guys who don't know, Trevor loves high school movies, and that movie almost seems like it could be one of those guilty pleasure Trevor movies.
I need to, that could be true. Maybe I need to check it out. I didn't really think about it in that context. I do love high school movies. But the way that Ansel Elgort plays this character of kind of showing his personality in different situations, being the really quiet kind of guy when he's around the criminals, and then the dancing, the excitement, the romance, it's all really good. And of course it has the incomparable John Hamm and Kevin Spacey. I feel like I don't want to give anything away too much, even though it's been 20 years, but do you guys feel like that this was like Verbal Kent's next step after Usual Suspects? Like this is what he rolled into doing after that.
That does make sense. Yeah, that would be a logical step for that character.
So yeah, anyway, I loved this. It's fantastic. It might be my favorite movie that I've seen this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is probably my favorite movie I've seen so far this year. It's a musical with cars. Like even from the very first scene, it's like choreographed in like how they get out of the car, and then they're all standing back there, and then they all shut the trunk. And even then, like Elgort starts, his character Baby starts singing in the car as they're doing the robbery. And I mean, within the first minutes of the movie, the tone for this movie is perfectly set in that it's a comedy heist musical. And it's something that Wright does so well, which is blend different genres that shouldn't work, but he makes it work. Like Shaun of the Dead is a romantic zombie comedy. It's a rom-zom com, and he does it so perfectly. And he does it once again here in how he blends action, car chase, heist, musical, comedy, all into one where nothing seems out of place and everything, every genre feels like it's given its space to work. I think part of the reason why the parts of this movie that are cheesy or unrealistic work so well is because of the fact that it's a musical. Like when you watch La La Land and they start dancing in the solar system, you're not taken out of the movie because the movie has given you indicators, and because it's a musical, like you're able to suspend your disbelief on things in a way that you wouldn't in other movies. And I think this movie does that once again, in that anytime that a character or something happens that like, that's not normally how that would happen or how that should happen, it works because it's a musical and we're able to let it go and stay in it because the music draws us in so well. The casting in this movie is insane. I mean, Ansel Elgort, John Hamm, Kevin Spacey, Jamie Foxx. You even have smaller actors like Isa Gonzalez, who I hadn't seen anything before, and she's fantastic.
She was great.
You have Lily James, who's amazing. You have John Bernthal, who's literally in it for a scene and commands that scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bernthal was so good. I was mad that he wasn't in it more.
But like, I think the fascinating thing is that like he's in it for that scene, and like the people who are on screen with him in that are John Hamm, Isa Gonzalez, Ansel Elgort, and Kevin Spacey. And they all kind of move aside and let him do his thing for a scene. And then he gives you that, like, that tone of like stakes within the world. And that's such a special like thing for him to give in this movie. I mean, and I think we're all forgetting to mention the best part of the best, you know, side character in this movie, the flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That was weird. That was a little weird.
It was a little out there, but yeah, gosh, this movie is so great. The way that Wright works a camera, I think he has such a unique vision on how to tell a scene. And there's these tracking shots early in the movie with Elgort as he's going to get coffee, that are just fantastic. And it just moves with him so well. And then you get to these chase scenes and it's almost like, it's such an homage to like the classic car chase films like Bullet. But at the same time, Wright takes those expectations and reworks them for his own use. And I can't say enough positive things about this movie. It's so good. I don't know if we want to go ahead and get into spoilers a little bit and talk about some of our favorite moments, but let's go ahead and do that. Cause I mean, unless you guys have any other general thoughts you want to throw out there really quick.
Basically I could sum this up, in like, what if Drive was funny?
Yeah. I kind of thought that too. I was a little the first like 10 seconds. I was like, is this going to be kind of like Drive just with a younger person? And then he started dancing in the car and I was like, nope, nope. Very different. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say one of the, I think you guys touched on this, but after I saw it, my wife mentioned it as well, and it's completely true, is the uniqueness, and I think you guys hit on it with storyboards, but one of the things that I love about Mad Max is that Mad Max is, George Miller didn't really have a script. He just had storyboards, and he just had a vision for how he visually wanted to go, and I feel like Mad Max is one of very few films that if you turned off the audio, you would get a very similar experience, because what's on screen works so well. And I think music is such a part of this movie that's not necessarily true for this, but the vision and the way that the story is visually told is so beyond anything else that people are doing nowadays.
Yeah.
Draws you in so well.
You could replace the rock and roll music during the chase scenes with like typical car chase music, and you would still have a phenomenal action movie. But the style of what the music adds and the humor, I mean, just takes it to that next level. This is a great action movie. It's like some of the best action I've seen in a long time in a film.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than an action movie, which is great.
Also, yeah. Let's go ahead. Laughed out loud during, I mean, I guess this is a little bit of a spoiler, but during the final chase scene, when they're all running different directions and Baby finally gets a car to steal and he tries to get out, and then it's John Hamm or Buddy and Darling backing into each other. Like, that made me laugh out loud. That was just like so pitch perfect for the film.
Yeah.
There are so many moments like that are like, I feel like Wright just visually does comedy like nobody else is doing. Like, there are ways that he films things that are funny. He just has an eye for, so I was listening to an interview actually with Jordan Peele this week, and he kept saying that like a director is really just having good taste. And I feel like Wright has really good taste in knowing how to just put things on screen. Like, he has an eye just for how to do things that may, I mean, I hope it, I'm guessing it's not just me based on like how his films have done, but he just has this eye for how to tell stories that connects with people so well.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best in terms of style and purpose and marrying the two. And a lot of directors aren't good at that. You know, they're like, let's just do something cool to do something cool. Michael Bay. But like, this has so much like cool, like just fun stuff that all serves a purpose to the story, to develop the characters, to pull you in deeper. None of it feels out of place, but at the same time, you know, it's this like hyper realistic world. I don't know. I mean, it's just, It walks a tightrope that would be so easy to fall off of, and I mean, it just is perfectly balanced.
There's a couple things I want to bounce off what you said. One is, I feel like kind of when you're like, you know, when you just have that feeling when you like want to get in the car and like turn up some awesome music and drive really fast, like mm-hmm. this movie is like what you dream of being, sort of.
Yeah,
it's like who you want. Yeah. Like you turn on your music, you have your freaking sweet sunglasses on, and you rev your engine, and it's like, that's what we're doing here. This is awesome. The other thing is I know that it's kind of become almost like a trope in past years of kind of goofy think pieces or serious think pieces about like, what is the great American novel? And you know, like there was a big thing about, is Mad Men the great American novel because of all the themes that it does. And I think in some ways, I know that Edgar Wright is a British filmmaker, but I think he made a quintessentially American film here. With especially with the American focus on cars and driving. I know that not all the cars he drives are American made or whatever. I don't really care, but this just feels like a truly like an American film made for an American audience, but made by one of the greatest filmmakers who happens to be British. It's like a summer blockbuster that has a soul.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think that's something that Edgar Wright does so well in all of his scripts and all of his movies, is he's able to put himself so well in whatever situation that he's able to almost project how the audience is going to watch a movie. And I mean this in the terms of like in past movies that he's done, the second that you have a question about something or that you think about something, he answers that question or brings it up on screen to give you more information about it. And I mean, so let's go ahead and go into spoilers. After the second robbery, one of the members of the crew, I guess we would call it, messes up and leaves his gun in one of their cars that they abandon. And as you start to think about that and they're working around the table, the seat's empty. And then Jamie Foxx gives you a little bit of clue of like, I killed him. And then as this, like that whole thing's coming to an end and you're kind of like, oh, I wonder if they'll touch on that at all and give us an answer. They give you a definitive answer when the time's ready for it. And I think he just has such a good pace for, like, he brings back Deborah into this movie at the perfect scenes where you're like, oh, I wonder what's going on with Deborah. And he brings her back in. And I wonder what's going on with these. I mean, he just has his finger so well on the pacing and thought process as the audience is watching. And I think that's why his movies work so well, is he's able to get in the mind of the audience and give them what he wants to give them as they should be giving it, instead of just giving us tons of stuff. Like, he's so good at putting himself in the seats of the audience and going, what do they need at this moment? How can I give that to them while still moving the story and characters along?
As far as pacing, I think there's a really good kind of lull of action in the middle of the film, which I think works really well. We kind of have some hard hitting action the first 25, 30 minutes. And then we of course have it at the end, but I mean, it kind of makes me to compare it. I watched Mission Impossible Rogue Nation a couple weeks ago, which is, I mean, a lot of fun and Tom Cruise running and crazy action, just like all the Mission Impossible films, but it's like almost overwhelming. Like every 10 minutes, there's like a crazy action sequence and you're like, what's going on? Like, this is too much. Heart rate is elevated for 2 hours, but like the time where you think Baby is done, you get these really great romance scenes with Baby and Deborah, especially in the laundromat, but also out to dinner, all those kind of things. And then it slowly starts to ramp back up again, but it gives you just enough of a breather where you can really kind of, it builds the character depth, but also kind of lets you rest a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that Christopher Nolan does incredibly well in his movies, is that he brings you in with action, gets you entertained, gets you hooked, and then we'll go back and explain kind of what happened. And instead of leading with exposition, he leads with entertainment and wanting to bring the audience in, and then we'll go back. And I think that's something that Wright does insanely well in this movie, is he gives you the car chases and then he slowly gives you information as you go.
Yeah, like this movie has such a good rhythm to it, especially with it being so focused on music. I mean, it's like it's like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but like every song that comes in, it immediately gives you the emotion for that scene. It also gives you the pace for that scene. And the music itself, like you can listen to the soundtrack all the way through and basically visualize what's happening on screen in your head, just because each song so perfectly fits what's happening on screen. And music is just constantly in this film, whether it's in the background or in Baby's headphones, and the way that they like cut the music out when people pull his headphones out.
I just
loved how we were like simultaneously in the head of Baby, but also like a viewer, just watching this crew go through this craziness. I just the way this film uses music is so impressive.
And I think that's Wright does details so well. Like there are so many, like in that first scene where, not first scene, but the first scene after the car chase, where Baby's just walking around getting coffee, on the walls as the music's playing, you see like, whoa, and there's all these different like words, and they just work it so well. And then there's the scene where Kevin Spacey comes and talks to Baby at his apartment, and he says, "We're going up, Baby," and then the elevator bell dings, and there's just so many like ways that this syncs up, and the way that the guns sync up during action scenes, like boom, 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 and then it's like there's pauses, but it goes with the beat. He does details insanely well. And one of my favorite ones is, so there's a, we're gonna go ahead and spoil a bunch, so if you haven't seen this, go see it, please go see it, it's fantastic. But there's a quote where the bank teller quotes Dolly Parton. And she goes, "The way I see it, if you want the rainbow, you got to put up with the rain." And at the end, like at the end of the battle, at the end fight scene, there's like water, almost like rain. And then when he gets out of jail at the end of the movie, there's a rainbow, like a big, bright rainbow at the end of it. And he just does details and payoffs so well. Like, and they don't ever seem cheesy. Like so many times when there are just payoffs after payoff after payoff, it comes off cheesy, and it's like, okay, you plant this here, so I get it. The way that he plants things is so natural that when they pay off later on, it's like you guys said, it's rhythmic in how it just works and flows from one thing to another. And I mean, so what did you guys catch when, as far as details go, were you guys like entertained by all of that as well?
Oh, I mean, Edgar Wright is the master of details and close-ups and all that stuff. And one of my, well, I'll actually just go ahead and plug my recommends for the week because it's based off of that. one is by Every Frame a Painting, a YouTube channel, and they have like an 8-minute video about how Edgar Wright does visual comedy and how he's the best at it. And I would highly recommend it. And then there's another one by Nerdwriter, who does Scott Pilgrim Make Your Transitions Count, about how Edgar Wright is just the master of using transitions to forward the story. And that's just what Edgar Wright does. Everything in the frame has a purpose. You could watch this film 10 times and still be picking up little scenes, little moments. I loved all the names of the cassette tapes and like how they reference what was said in earlier conversations, and then also things that you didn't know what they were. And so in your mind, you're thinking like, where did that name come from? What happened in that bank robbery or something? I mean, this movie's just visually a masterclass in how to, like you said, plant and pay off with just enough tongue in cheek to where it's not horrible or obvious, but like also funny and kind of like winking at the audience.
I almost wished that I could like pause it when it showed the whole tape collection so I could read all of the titles. Like I may do that the next time I watch this film, like if I Redbox it or something, because
like it's every Wright film gets better the more you watch it, and you catch things the second, third, and fourth. I mean, I have to have seen like Hot Fuzz like 10 times by now, and I watched it the other night and was still picking up on new things. And he's insane. Like I don't get how he isn't a bigger deal. And I get that he wants to stay small and have his creative vision on screen and doesn't want studios. But I mean, this is the guy that it's like, if there was Okay, I'm going to regret saying this once again. I have a new trend of I feel like I say something on each podcast that I'm going to regret saying. If Edgar Wright was to direct a Transformers movie, I would be excited. Like, I would go see that wholeheartedly.
That would
because
be awesome.
It's Edgar Wright.
Well, I mean, he was going to direct Ant-Man, and everyone was, like, super pumped to see him do a superhero movie. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'll see anything this guy makes. He like you said, he hasn't made a bad movie.
I know that we already compared it to Drive once, and I mean they're obviously somewhat similar movies. I remember Ryan Gosling saying that Drive was his superhero movie. This kind of is a superhero movie.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. There's a little more depth to it, and there's not quite the hero aspects, but definitely like the superpower kind of aspects with his driving ability. But also having the weakness of the having to have the music and all of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of superhero-ish things going on here.
It's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a great parallel, Trevor. I didn't thought about it that way, but I mean, with his parkour scenes that he has, and this really does feel like a superhero film. And I'd be curious to hear if there are elements from Ant-Man that he brought to this, that he was like, oh, I wish I'd been able to do that in that film.
Hmm.
Like just kind of bits that he had not gotten to do with that. I would love to have read his Ant-Man script. He's still got a writing credit, but I know that Peyton Reed, when he came in to direct, did a lot of rework on the script. So I would have loved to have seen his Ant-Man. That would have been fantastic. But I think I'm fine if every 4 years, if we have to wait 4 years every time to just get an original Edgar Wright film, because he is one of the few directors that's just turning out original after original piece. And so far, like Jake, like you said, he's 5 for 5. He has yet to miss. And I'm excited to see what he does next. He has a couple of things that he's working on. And he says in a recent interview, he said, I've got something crazy coming next, which, gosh, could mean anything. I know that there's a TV show that he's been rumored to have directed an episode of, but I think he's like, if you look at his IMDb, he's got like 4 or 5 movies that he's attached to that are all original ideas of his that he's trying to work on. I mean, there's one that's like Jungle Grasshopper, there's Shadows, there's, he has a lot of films that he could be popping out in the next couple of years. But
I feel like he is like the next Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, that's what I kind of caught some shades of Tarantino from this film, just in the kind of unique story structure, the depth of characters. It doesn't have the gratuitous violence of Tarantino, which is not quite, I mean, which is Tarantino's thing. But yeah, I can see some similar kind of ideas there.
Yeah, just like playing off of classic film tropes and style and making it your own and only working on original properties. I mean, it's very, I think he's our generation's, even though he's like 20 years older than us, our generation's Tarantino, which is awesome. But I want to talk about the ending. So spoilers, 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 spoilers.
Spoilers!
Exactly.
Oh.
What did you think about the ending? Because like I can't quite shake the feeling that this was like 10 million short of being a masterpiece or something. Like how do you not end this movie with a car chase? Like, to me, it felt kind of weak, and it keeps it from being a masterpiece in my mind. I don't know. It felt rushed. It felt kind of out of place. I don't know, just the ending didn't fully work for me. What did you guys think?
I was a huge fan of the ending. I mean, I thought the little twist where baby comes back, so I mean, like, it's hard because the whole third act of the movie just feels continuous, and so I don't know where to jump in and break down the ending, but in my eyes, it's like when he comes back and is willing to give Kevin Spacey all of the money for that one tape of his mom.
Well, I mean, like the prison scene. Like,
oh,
going to prison.
Oh, like you feel like that
and
was.
And then just like getting out and then we're done. Like that last five minutes felt just super rushed.
I feel like that was kind of like, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this because it makes sense in my head. I'm trying to figure out how to get it out. But I feel like he foreshadowed that with the Dolly Parton. And I would have almost been like, when you look at the films that he's trying to trying to give credit to and trying to almost give an homage to, he's like, Bonnie and Clyde is for sure one of them, especially in the third act. And it almost wouldn't make sense for them to just drive off, at least in my head, if they had just driven off into the distance, into the sunset, and never been heard from again, that would have felt like it would have just felt unauthentic to me. And so I think how he ends the movie is right for the character, in that Baby's always trying to do the right thing. And so in his eyes, he's like, I'm going to serve my time, do my thing. And then he's able to live with a clean conscience because he's not running from the law anymore. And he ultimately cares so much about Deborah that if he had pulled her into this world, and he even says it like, you're not meant to, like, I don't remember the exact quote, but it's like, you're not meant to be a part of this world. Or like, you don't need to be a part of this. He's ultimately sacrificing himself because of his love for her. And he's giving up 5 years of his life so that they can have a lifetime together. At least that's what I felt about it.
I understand the character motivation, and like, it totally, I just, for some reason, it just didn't feel, it felt rushed, I think. And I think that's what it comes down to, is like, we had basically a 45 minute long action chase scene, which was absolutely incredible. And then like, oh, we have 5 minutes to tie a bow on this. Here we go. And we're done. I don't know.
But that's classic musical. Like, musicals always kind of do that at the end. They have this like really quick wrap up to give you the happy ending. And I think because I looked at it as a musical the entire time, like, that made sense to me. Like, it feels like Singing in the Rain, or it feels like I, for lack of a better movie, like La La Land, in that it gives you that jump of time to give you the ending that you need from the movie.
Yeah.
At least that's what I took about it. Trevor, what are your thoughts on the ending?
Yeah, I think it worked for me also. I think that it's true to the characters. I think it's true to the experiences that we see. I think that, I mean, you can kind of see, I mean, once Baby decides that he wants to be done with all of this, everything else that he does is trying to get closer to that. Whether it's killing Buddy so that Buddy's not trying to kill him continuously, or any of those kind of things. I think that what all of, from that on, from kind of the last few minutes, he's trying to somewhat atone for things, and realizes that there's no more use in running anymore. And I don't know, it maybe was a little bit rushed. I guess I can kind of see where you'd say that, Jake, but it worked for me, and I think it felt really honest. I think, yeah, it also is the problem when you have Deborah driving the same car that's already been beat up and everyone can see where it is. You know, she's obviously not thinking like a criminal,
yeah,
and jacking a different car for them to drive around in.
Yeah. I think there's only so long that they would have made it. And if they had gone on the run, she would have been pulled down. So it works for me because it's one of the few, like, the ending satisfying. So the getting there works for me. Like, I agree, it's a little rushed, but the end product works. And that's, I think, ultimately what I came away with.
Yeah. Of course, they're running away in a Bronco.
That was such a nice little, like, out of all the cars they could have driven, it's a Bronco that they go on the run with.
Yep.
The only really other thing I want to talk about is the cast, because I feel like, for as much as we've talked about the story and how good Wright did, we've talked very little about how terrifying Jamie Foxx is.
He's so good.
How perfect John Hamm is in this role. And I mean, those two guys, and Kevin Spacey, like, there's so many parts of this cast that just work, that, like, Jamie Foxx is absolutely terrifying. And Kevin James is terrifying when he needs to be, and then heartfelt when he needs to be.
Kevin James?
John Hamm.
Kevin James is in this movie?
Oh, gosh, Kevin James. I put Kevin James, Kevin Spacey, and Lily.
Can you imagine if like, it was Paul Kevin Blart, James? Paul Blart shows up. And
stop robbing the bank.
I've consciously been avoiding that this entire time. I'm like, I know I'm gonna like, because on my notes I have Lily James and Kevin Spacey.
Oh
like,
man, so
one
funny.
Above the other, and so I knew I was gonna mess up at some point and get Kevin James in there.
It would have been such a better movie.
Such Happy Madison movie. Productions. You have Adam Sandler as Baby, and he's, I mean, he would straight up do a baby voice as he's like driving. Why do I somewhat like long for that? Like, the terrible movie side of me is like, I somewhat long now for a Baby Driver with the Happy Madison crew.
Oh my gosh.
It'll happen.
Ugh.
But it'll happen.
Maybe it'll be one of his upcoming Netflix movies.
Yeah.
Oh, have you guys, we don't need to talk about this, but his Netflix movies are terrible.
Oh.
Like Ridiculous 6 is one of the worst movies.
Yeah. But
how is
back to the cast?
How they re-up that contract? Yeah, back to the cast.
Ansel Elgort, phenomenal. He should change his name to Baby though in real life, because what a weird name he has. Jamie Foxx, terrifying. Kevin Spacey, amazing as usual. Lily James, great. John Hamm, I think one of the most underappreciated actors in our time currently.
He's one of the greats.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like literally every single person in this cast is perfectly cast. Perfectly plays their role. Just phenomenal. I forget the John Hamm's wife's name. She's awesome.
Isa Gonzalez.
Yeah, she was amazing and like totally out of nowhere.
She was also terrifying in a different way than Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Yes.
Joe,
their dynamic, John Hamm and her, was really like fun to watch. Like that was fully believable, fully developed. But that scene when they're in the diner, and she's like, I'm going to take this one. I'm going to speak for my buddy.
Yeah.
And like John Hamm's just staring. That scene is just so like that diner scene in and of itself does amazing things for the rest of the movie. As far as playing out Baby and Deborah and Isaac Gonzalez and John Hamm, Buddy and what's her character? Darling. Yeah. Gosh. Well, I mean, Trevor, what was your, I mean, did you have a favorite actor in this movie?
I think that if I had to say the best performance, it's probably Jamie Foxx. He's so good in it, but I mean, everyone is great. I'm glad. I was getting a little bit worried that Kevin Spacey is just Frank Underwood in different versions now, but this kind of helped in, as far as that goes, that he was not very Frank Underwood like at all. I mean, he was definitely killing people, but didn't have the same personality really. Yeah. And I think that the way that he plays the humanity of the character really kind of seals it as a character with depth. He's not just a criminal mastermind, but he has this kind of understanding and empathy, especially at the end when his like tune changes completely when he sees Deborah and he sees that like her and Baby are like, he can like tell that it's like legitimately something going on there.
Yeah.
And he like is at that point, he's like, he literally is willing to die for them because
great,
he knows of the
great
situation
turn
and everything.
For the character. Great turn for the character. And it was like totally was earned like, and believable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part about that is like, that would be such a cheesy scene in any other hands, but like, Edgar Wright maneuvers that so well that when that happens, you're not like, wow, what the heck? That would never happen. Like you're pumped and you're like even more pulled into the movie.
No, it feels like redemption instead of a cheesy, like nice moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, looking back at the previous films, Jamie Foxx has had a rough couple of years. I would say like I was just going through his filmography.
Really
so he did Django in 2012, and since then he did White House Down,
ugh,
Rio 2,
ugh,
Amazing Spider-Man 2, ugh, as Electro, which is awful,
so bad.
Then he did Horrible Bosses 2, Annie, which
so
isn't
bad.
Great. Then he Dude, did
make he, that money.
Yeah,
he wasn't in a movie for 3 years after Annie, and then he did a movie called Sleepless this year, which I've never heard of. I wonder if that's... Oh, that came out earlier this year. That's like a Liam... Oh, T.I.'s in that movie. Let's go.
Oh.
And then in 2018.
It's got a 34 Metascore.
Let's go.
Oh, yikes. In 2018, he has a updated modern version, a gritty take on the classic Robin Hood story where he plays Little John.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
So Taron Egerton as Robin Hood, Jamie Dornan from 50 Shades of Grey as Will Scarlet, Ben Mendelsohn as Sheriff Nottingham, and Jamie Foxx as Little John.
Wow.
Ben Mendelsohn is going to be great as the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Ben Mendelsohn could be in anything and he'd be the greatest at it. I mean, that guy just, he works.
Well,
he's such a good bad guy.
At least Jamie got his like one critical acclaim every 5 years. So now he can just keep getting those checks.
Dude has an Oscar.
I know, yeah. Like he's amazing, right? But he does like one good movie every 3 or 5 years. And then he's like, okay.
He's like if Daniel Day-Lewis did terrible films in between his Oscar winning performances.
That's true.
But is it a stretch for me to say that this should be nominated? I mean, I know we're in June, but I guess we're in July. July 1st. Congrats, guys.
I think it's definitely a Best Picture nominee. I don't see how it couldn't be. I definitely see how it couldn't be, but it definitely should be.
Yeah. I mean, as of right now, it's definitely in the top 10 of the year. We'll see what happens in the fall. But I mean, in terms of like fun, I don't think any movie will beat how fun this movie was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I know we were joking about this earlier, but this has to win Best Sound Editing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it doesn't.
Everything.
Yeah.
Editing,
well, actually, yeah, it'll be. It definitely should be nominated for Best Editing also. Script.
Yeah. This is a technical masterpiece in the editing room for sure.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm running through the list of Academy Awards in my head, and there's a lot that I think this film should at least be nominated for. I think there's better scripts, but I think as far as original scripts go, this is a pretty unique and original script, and cinematography, all the editing like we talked about. I think this film could do pretty well come next February. But let's go ahead and get to our ratings of the movie. Jake, what would you give this film?
I'm just going to give this one an A. It's not quite an A plus. I mean, I said my hesitancy on the ending, but I mean, it might grow on me in a year and who knows. But I mean, first watch, I just saw it last night. This is my favorite movie of the year so far. Really close with Wonder Woman. This is an A. Just probably the most fun you're going to have at the movies, and it'll make you want to drive super fast listening to some awesome music. Trevor, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to give this 4 coffees out of 4. baby, B-A-B-Y.
What's your name, baby?
It's so fun. Like I said, I'll say like I did with Wonder Woman, I'm giving it 4 out of 4. It's not a perfect film, but it is a great film. It's a wonderful film. A lot of fun. I think I like it better than Wonder Woman as far as films this year so far. But it's pretty close. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and give it an A. Very rarely will I give a film an A plus on first viewing. But I think this is definitely one that over time, come the end of the year, this will almost for sure be in my top 10, and it may be pretty high up there. It's, if not my favorite film I've seen this year so far, definitely within the top 3. But yeah, what a success. What a great movie. And especially with the movies we've been seeing lately, I was starting to get bogged down and like, guys, we've only reviewed terrible movies lately. Like we need a pick me up. And this is that pick me up. And that's, What a great pick me up. But let's hit our content of the week. Jake, what is your content of the week? Or you've already plugged it. Do you have anything else that you want to plug?
Well, I'll just re-say those. Nerd Writer and Every Frame a Painting. Just search Edgar Wright and watch those on YouTube. And then I have a podcast that I want to recommend. If you are a fan of the ESPN 30 for 30 films, they just started doing ESPN 30 for 30 podcasts. and
yeah,
I would really, really recommend them. They're really well done. First one came out. I think the next one will come out sometime this week, I think. But yeah, I mean, they're just really entertaining and really well done, just like the films. So yeah.
Trevor?
All right, two things. One, a podcast. The great author Malcolm Gladwell has a podcast called Revisionist History. Season two just started a couple weeks ago, and he kind of takes it a look at well-known historical events, historical things, things in pop culture, and kind of digs into the story behind them. Most recently, he did an episode about golf courses and how they're such a poor use of land, especially public land, and kind of digs into that and how that affects society. It's very interesting stuff. My other thing is a TV show that I touched on earlier, and it's called Master of None, and it's by Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang, who worked together on Parks and Rec. Alan Yang is the bass player in Mouse Rat and also one of the producers of Parks and Rec. And him and Aziz together have made Master of None, which, in my opinion, is the best show on television currently. Season one is really good. It's a little bit too focused on sex, to its own detriment in some ways. But season two is truly amazing. It has one of the best television episodes I've ever seen. And it also has kind of a few episodes put together are one of the best romantic comedies that I've ever seen. It's an amazing show. It stabs you in the heart. It warms you. It laughs you. And what? Makes you laugh. It is it is fantastic. Check out Master of None. It's on Netflix. You guys all have Netflix, so watch it.
It's so good.
There we go. So Jake took my weekly recommend. I was going to recommend the new 30 for 30 podcast, which is fantastic. No, you're good. But because this movie is so music-centric, I'm going to recommend an album I've been listening to a lot lately, and it is the new album by Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit called The Nashville Sound. It's so good. There's a couple songs on there that if you just listen to the lyrics, and one song called If We Were Vampires, he's just such a great songwriter, and because this movie is pretty music-centric, I wanted to go ahead and plug that. That's all we have for this week. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes and give us 5 stars, like and subscribe us. We would greatly appreciate your reviews. We would greatly appreciate you recommending this to a friend. If you want to hear more of our episodes, you can either go to iTunes, like I've mentioned, or you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com. You can find some amusing tweets that Trevor puts out on our Twitter account called Popcorn Optional. And you can go to Facebook and find us on Facebook at Popcorn Optional as well. I'm Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321 Cami Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
I'm off the social media right now, but my website is jakebrown.tv. Trevor?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor. And if you want to see lots of cool pics of San Diego, you can check out my Instagram.
Heyo.
Nice. There we go. We will be back next week, and I'm pretty sure I feel confident in saying that we're going to be reviewing Spider-Man Homecoming, the new Marvel Cinematic Universe film starring Tom Holland.
So not...
Or were you guys wanting to do Despicable
Me 3?
Okay, wait. So no joke. Jake, the Coyote Drive-In in our area, which is a local drive-in, they have two locations, Louisville and Fort Worth. The Louisville location... I was checking to see if they had Baby Driver there, because what fun way to see a driving movie than a drive-in. 3 of the 5 screens at the Louisville Coyote Drive-In are some combination of Cars 3 and Despicable Me 3, with one playing first and one playing second.
Wow.
3 of the 5.
Makes sense.
The other ones are Transformers
and
Mummy.
It's a family thing, so I guess it makes sense, but that's depressing.
Coyote Drive-In, that's a sad choice, but you guys are an awesome...
I was hoping you were going to say that it was Despicable Me 3 and Spider-Man as a double feature.
That'd be great.
Yeah, if you live in the DFW area, go to Coyote Drive-In. Fantastic drive-in. So much fun, especially during the summer. But that's all we have for this week. We've loved talking movies, and until next week, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.